Hi, and welcome to episode 97 of the Studio Insider Art Podcast. In today's episode, Steph and I are unpacking the world of art prizes and grants. We talk through various aspects of this world, such as how art prizes and grants differ from each other and what the experience of applying for each is like. We also talk about the exposure to risk of failure in this process and how, for someone like me, this can be disabling. But for Steph, she has found that she's been able to move on from hearing no and find her way through this. I was recently the recipient of an art prize, which surprised no one more than me. And it's made me realize that it's actually worth the effort to apply for the opportunities for art funding that are out there. So if you've been thinking about applying for art prizes or grants, this is a great episode to help you build your bravery and learn about what to expect. I'm Susan Ethicott, and this is the Studio Insider Art Podcast, where I open up about what it's really like to be a professional artist. Whether I'm having chats with my studio bestie Steph, interviewing inspiring creatives, or answering listener questions, there's something here for every established and emerging artist. My mission is that my journey will help you feel a bit more at home in your own. Hi, Steph.
Hello, Suze.
How are you?
I'm really well, actually.
I'm so glad. Me too.
Yeah.
Isn't it nice when we're like both really good and feeling all the warmth? That they're good times. We've got to reflect on those and just like make the most of them, don't we?
Yeah, because it's not always true. We're quite honest on here about how we're really going. So
because we are real human beings.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, but let's go there. Let's go to talk about, you know, the good times, the hard times, all the times, because we've both been having all the spectrum of experiences in terms of things that are going on in our art businesses, haven't we?
Yeah, we have. And I was so thrilled for you late last year. I mean, you're deep in it now, but late last year you won an art prize just before Christmas. So it probably got lost in the ether a little bit there. But I really want to check in with you about that and where you're at with that. And then I thought I'd talk about some rejection that I've had.
Because that's the thing, isn't it? Whenever we apply for something, there's always the possibility that it's not going to work out, which was quite frankly exactly what I thought was going to happen with that art prize. I just even not in a million years thought I'd win the thing. Although something in me must have felt like there was a possibility because I actually applied for it and I hardly apply for anything.
Okay, so let's talk about that because you don't apply for these things. Forge your own path. Yeah. So what was different about this opportunity?
Well, let's unpack this a bit because it might be relevant for people out there when they're considering their opportunities too. So the thing that grabbed me about it was that it was actually a friend of mine who's previously won this award who sent me the link and said, you know, I won this a couple of years ago. You should think about applying for this. And my friend is actually a doctor and used to live here in Ballarat. And the award is from a medical association. So it's an art prize run by AGES, which is the Australian Gynecological Endoscopy Society.
Okay.
So it's
very
not
specific. Yeah.
Very specific, but also very intertwined with some big scale commission work I've done in the past. So I thought, well, you know, I've actually fitted out an entire IVF clinic in Melbourne with huge paintings. It was such an amazing commission job to do. And I get commission clients through there all the time. So I feel like my work and my subject matter really resonates with that area of medicine, which is very female oriented.
It is. But the backstory to that, in case people are fresh to your story, is your first child was
correct.
An IVF baby,
yes,
yeah?
Which was where I was going to go. So I feel very connected with that journey, that fertility journey, because I did IVF to have my beautiful first child. Yeah. And then I had the miracle baby 16 months later that I didn't think I could conceive naturally. So I've had kind of both experiences. But I do have a really deep connection with the fertility journey, and I feel like that really shows in my work. I mean, I paint flowers and blooming and, you know, so I felt like if I was going to apply for anything, this work I know appeals to that sort of demographic. So I applied, and I got it and I couldn't believe it. Like, it was actually quite delayed. I literally just put in the application. It was probably 6 or 9 months ago and completely forgot about it. And it was interesting. It felt like a bit of a, I was like, look, you know, you never do this. You never apply for anything. Don't worry. It's not people in the art establishment judging your work, because I think actually that's where my biggest fears are, is being judged by people from within the establishment.
Right.
Which I think is something to unpack in a little bit,
because
that's obviously an area that I think you feel a bit more comfortable in.
Okay.
Just, you apply for grants within the art establishment. That's one area I've avoided simply because of my rejection sensitive dysphoria.
Yes.
Which, in case you haven't listened before, is something that I suffer from, which I didn't realize was a condition, but it actually is, and I have it for sure. So, so when I applied for it, I kind of thought, well, I understand that demographic because I've created work for that demographic, so I'm only going to put forward the really bright floral abstract work that I know appeals there and also that, you know, consistently sells.
Yes.
Which, so the portfolio that I sent through was a collection of that work, and some of it was a little bit more muted, but it was very much that very colourful work. And I sent a lovely, redid my bio, just made it very concise and, you know, on point, and just put it in and completely forgot about it. And I was literally sitting on the loo when I was reading the email on my phone. Sorry, too much information.
Yes, you do. I love that. No, that's great.
Yeah. So I was sitting, I almost deleted the email, but they'd been smart enough to actually underline, you have been awarded the prize. And I read it about 5 times and was just in deep shock and like, oh my gosh. And I tell you, I completely underestimated how good it would make me feel, because I think I've convinced myself that awards don't matter, having that success doesn't matter. But gee, it felt nice to win something for my art.
Recognition.
Yeah, it was a really nice feeling. So, yeah, so it's an acquisitive award, which means they acquire artwork. The award money was 10 grand, which is a nice amount of money to know is going to be coming my way.
Yeah.
And the period of the award is 2022-2023. So it's over sort of a long period of time, and I have to paint them 3 paintings.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're going to auction those paintings off for charity at their events.
Okay.
Yeah. They have like medical conferences and things. So it'll actually be a really great marketing opportunity to a demographic that I know already buys my work. And I love painting for doctors because they not too fussy and well, you know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
Because some commission work, you know, people are very nitpicky, but doctors are really busy people and are generally pretty happy with what you put in front of them.
Yeah.
And if you're working from a brief and you're fairly familiar, you know, it makes it a bit easier.
And they're often commissioning works for their workplaces,
So they're large.
Yeah. It's not something sitting in their living room that they're going to look at every single day. It's about providing experience for their patients and the well-being that their patients are going to receive from the art experience,
Totally. Right. And I've loved doing that fit out. That was a really great job. I love like being able to work on large canvases and creating sort of a concept that travels through a space. I really enjoy that part of the commission process, probably more than the littler commissions. So it's, you know, a great demographic to have more exposure to.
Let's just name it. Doctors have money to spend.
You know, we know that they have, you know, they're in a good demographic financially for investing in artists. So you're not sort of sweating it over the, oh, is it, have I given them too high of a price or, So it's really
exciting.
It is exciting. And thank you.
Great.
It's a lovely thing. Yeah.
So that's going to shape your next 12 months or so, isn't it? 12 to 18?
Look, it makes a big difference, especially like, I mean, I remember late last year we were talking about, you know, how tough it had been in the last sort of, I think like things picked up in my art business toward the end of the year. I think they might have a bit for you too. Like, you know, we just hit the sale season and recovered some of those sales that, you know, we'd had the challenges sort of, I reckon between June, July and sort of September, October, it was pretty dry.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a really, it was nice timing knowing that I was just sort of coming into a bit of guaranteed income.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, thinking back, I remember a conversation where you were talking about, should you offer a sale? It'd be really nice to fill the coffers a little bit, et cetera, et cetera. And then literally a couple of days later, you got this award, which meant that, okay, that you'd covered those bases.
Yeah, it did. It made a difference. And I did, you know, I was going to sort of, you know, do a bigger sale than I've ever really done before on my original artwork. I mean, I still sold stuff, you know, did my black, I always do a little Black Friday sale where I kind of, you know, let go of pieces not at a really good price that have been, you know, sitting on my shelves or whatever for a few years.
Right.
But I didn't end up discounting the originals that I was intending to, because I was like, oh, okay, I don't really have to do that, and I'd prefer not to because I don't really want to devalue. But, you know, I actually don't think it would devalue anyway. I wasn't going to do a massive sale.
No.
Yeah, 30%, which you did that.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, how did that work out for you?
Good. I mean, I kind of bundled it in as a studio sale.
Yeah, because it was your birthday. Your birthday, because I know you don't like doing the Black Friday stuff. I know it kind of rubs me the wrong way too, but I figure people, it's more like people get, okay, it'll be a good discount. I'll take a look at that email, because people don't open emails like they used to.
I don't even send emails.
Well, yeah, you do it all through the socials, yeah.
Yeah, generally, long story, can't be bothered basically. But, yeah, I did. I did a studio sale, so there were lots of like sketches, like things that I wouldn't normally put into the public realm that were, you know, building towards another piece of work or just exploring something new. So I put those on my website along with discounting what was already on there. But yeah, it was good because I feel like a sale, you know, the sales model is built around big retail who buy stock in bulk, and at the end of a season they have stuff left over and they're just trying to, you know, limit their losses.
Yeah.
But when you're an artisan, that model is not appropriate. That's
isn't. Like, I mean, I've been painting for several years now and I have plenty that I'm ready to move on about that time of each year. I actually need this, like I literally run out of storage space. So I actually do need to do a cull. But yes, you could do it through a studio sale. Yeah. And I totally get what you're saying about, like, you know, you don't want to put into people's head that you are like those retailers that's like, you know, manufacturing goods.
Yeah, or that. I mean, the cost to you is still the same. Like the emotional, the investment from you is still the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true. It is true. But, and I get that.
But I do think discounting work is a really good way to thank people.
It is. I loved how you framed it up that way.
Because we often have people who are cheerleaders for us and supporters of us that aren't necessarily in the demographic that would be able to buy
absolutely
work. I do it all the time with artists that I am cheering on from the sidelines. It's when they have a second sale or something that I grab their things because it's, you know, it's just outside my price bracket. Doesn't mean it's too expensive. It's just that it's not
it's
within my budget.
And that is so true. And most of the people that buy the stuff in those sales are local people for me.
Me too.
And it's really nice because they come and pick it up and I get to meet them. And often they're people that have been following my work for a really long time, as you say, like can't afford it because they just don't have that in their budget for art. So it's actually a really nice thing to do.
Yeah.
And I like the time of year it happens because you can actually get stuff out to people before the craziness of the whole insane Christmas sale season and it's got time to ship and I kind of see that as the last.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
But so what's that, late November really?
Yeah, it's the end of November, which, you know, was never really on our radar in Australia until relatively recently. Mm-hmm. It's always the Black Friday thing's always been a Thanksgiving US phenomenon, but because I've had such a strong US clientele, I kind of felt like it was appropriate for me to offer that as well from that for that point of view. And I usually always do a print sale then too. Because and that's partly because my printer often offers a discount in that period. So I hand that on.
Oh, I see.
So that's And then that gives it enough time for them to print and me to ship out for Christmas as well. So that's kind of like my last big push on prints for the year. So I feel like we're kind of summing up the end of 2021 as we're heading into 2022. But hey, let's talk about, because backtracking a little bit. Yeah. So, you know, we were in conversation about this, I remember, around the time of the sales season, because you were applying for grants as well, because we were both kind of, you know, we're still pivoting, feel like a blooming ballerina after 2020, 2021, the amount of the pivoting we've been doing over and over, you know, looking at, okay, how can we make up for this isn't quite working? So for you, you applied for some grants.
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
I applied for a range of different things. So a local one, a local city council. The government released a bunch of stimulus funding to support creatives in our state. So I applied for that. And I applied for a fellowship as well. Oh, and another one with the RACV, you know, the automotive organization.
Oh, what was that one?
That was, they gave funding to three artists within Victoria to create works. I think it was a $10,000 grant.
Oh, okay, cool. Similar kind of thing to the one that I applied for.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, alignment to their community outcomes, et cetera, et cetera. But I got rejected a lot. I feel okay about it.
So just walk us through that, because I mean, I'm really interested in hearing about how you remain resilient in the face of that, because this like is tough.
Do you know what is the most annoying thing is how much bloody work they are. And, you know, like I've always been very good at English language and English literature, you know, so writing is a skill of mine. I worked really hard. You know, there's a lot of research that goes in. You're developing concepts. You're, you know, researching what the organization's goals are so that you can make sure what you're proposing is aligned to that. You're drafting and redrafting. And it's weeks of work. And it's great if you get awarded, but it's quite frustrating if you don't.
Yeah.
So for a long time, I'd avoided that sphere of income and done what you've done, which is just forge my own path. Like if I'm spending 3 weeks on an application that might come to nothing, it makes way more sense to just spend 3 weeks nurturing my business.
Well, this, yeah, which is kind of the mindset I've had as well. I just, there's something in me that, you know, I feel like I'm pretty good at making money when I put my mind to it, as I think you are too, like it for the most part.
Yeah.
Unless there's exceptional circumstances like we faced sort of, you know, over the last couple of years. But yeah, it's kind of, you know, there's these opportunities out there though. And there you do want to see, you know, you think, well, and you're very good at speaking the speak. Like you are. You have a very good handle on how to frame up those applications, and you have a good handle on what those organizations are kind of looking for as well. And you do your research. I mean,
I do, but I still always get rejected. So I'm obviously not doing a good enough job of it. but the reason I chose this time around, that season, to apply for things is I'd had a catch up, a coffee with the curator of our local art gallery. And there was a day called, it was like National Ask Your Curator Day last year. And one of the questions I asked, so the curator, Julie, she put out this, you know, little thing on social media saying, what would you like to ask me for this day? And my question was, why is it that I can create art that people want to buy and have in their homes, and I can build a business around it, yet every time I apply for an exhibition or let's say something within the formalized gatekeeper world of fine art, I'm consistently rejected. What is it? Like, I'm not going to take offense. I just really want to know what's going on there. Is it that it's too commercial? It's not highbrow enough? Is it that I'm not languaging things properly? Is it that I actively reject that elitist world and that doesn't do me any favors? I don't play the game. And she said, well, that's far too big a question to answer through social media. So let's just catch up and chat this through. Anyway, it was very interesting. I didn't necessarily reach any specific conclusions, but one of the things that came out of the conversation for me as a key takeaway was I'm very clear on what my goals are as a business person, as an entrepreneur, as an artist with a business. But it's been a very long time since I thought about what are my career goals as an artist. What do I want my artistic legacy to be? And what do I need to do to make that happen?
Mm-hmm.
So I began to ask myself those questions and dig into what that looked like and whether I wanted to exhibit or, you know, all these things. And it led me to the place where you reached when you got that email on the loo where where you felt seen.
Yeah, and I actually, after experiencing that, totally get there's always a part of us, isn't there, that's seeking approval and
some validation.
Seeking validation from those who look at art.
Yeah.
Not just from those who might want to buy it for their home. And because I think you and I, you know, we have had a lot of exposure within that art world and formal art training, they kind of sow the seeds for you wanting to feel like that too. Like,
of course they do.
And I think both of us are a bit conflicted about that. It's like,
very much.
I kind of want it, but I kind of know I kind of, you know, should be able to feel my own worth and all of those things. But oh, look, it's human nature, isn't it, to seek approval in some way. I mean, and you can have levels of that being healthy and unhealthy, and I don't think the way either of us are doing it is in an unhealthy way at all. But you're right, like it feels pretty nice when you do get acknowledged.
Hey friends, just popping in to let you know that it's that time again, the Painting as a Practice free painting challenge that I run every February. I created this month-long painting challenge 2 years ago to help my community of artists to establish and nurture a regular painting practice, share the journey, and cheer each other along. Since then, this challenge has helped thousands of artists worldwide and is absolutely free to join. I provide you with 28 prompts, one for each day of February 2022, but you can totally decide on how many days you'll paint. I, for example, will be painting on weekdays, but not weekends. I like to call it a soft challenge because I think we all need a bit of flexibility built into all challenges. I also have a free mini e-course called How to Paint as a Practice that will help you learn all about how to create a successful art practice and make the most out of your challenge month. So if you'd like to join me and access all my freebies this February 2022, simply go to the challenge page on my website, susannethercottstudio.com/challenge, or simply click the link in the show notes. And if you'd like to really supercharge your art practice this February with my Painting as a Practice trilogy of e-courses, you can get 20% off all courses and bundles for the month of February by using the code FEB22 at the checkout. I'll see you there.
Yeah, and something that I realized is when I showed the curator my artist CV, which let's be honest, I've never done before because I'm a rebel. I'm like, I don't want to do this formalized silly list of things that are supposed to mean things. It's like I could put stuff up in like my neighbor's house and said I had a solo exhibition. Like it doesn't really mean anything to me, you know, unless I'm...
Did she say, does it mean something to them?
Yes.
What do they read from that?
They read that you've consistently created bodies of work and that you have put them into the public realm.
Okay. And that's a significant yardstick for them.
For them, but I think that's a bit backward, honestly. Mm. It's like they haven't caught up with how contemporary artists actually have public outcomes every single flipping day, because we're sharing and putting things out into
presence.
The world. Yeah.
Yeah.
So to say, well, I've had X number of commissions and I'm selling X number of art pieces on my website is less relevant, I think. I don't know. I'm not an assessor, but this is the vibe that I get. It's not quite within their understanding. And I think people that sit in that realm are often fairly academic in their approach to fine art, and those traditional outputs are easier for them to understand.
Mm.
And certainly easier to verbalize in those like 500 words that you get.
Yeah.
To talk about your work.
It's so interesting, isn't it? Like, I mean, the reason that I don't participate in many exhibitions is really fiscal, because they're never very successful for me from sales point of view. So that's I focus right. my attention on putting them in places where people will buy them, and all those places are digital.
Right. So really it feels like to have an exhibition is just an ego-driven
Well,
exercise.
Yes, and not a very fiscally rewarding one.
No. It's
well,
really
it can be for some people. It's just that's been my experience. Yeah. I mean, and also participating in exhibitions that aren't where you live is really how do you do that during COVID? And it wasn't happening during COVID. And if you've got young kids like we do in a life that you're running in one town to try and, you know, physically deliver artworks to another location is actually a huge job.
And as you're being an emerging artist, the financial emphasis is on you. You know, like often you have to pay the gallery to show your work. You have to pay for the framing. You have to pay for marketing.
Ah, yes, there's high expectations.
It's a huge outlay.
It is. And I don't frame a lot of my work because it's traditionally gone more overseas. So I take it off the stretcher bars.
That's right.
So you're right. But yeah, it's hard, isn't it? It's like,
which avenue
do you choose? And I think you and I have kind of chosen in a way to kind of go a more commercial digital route. But I hear you. Like, there's still that desire that I didn't know really how much that was there until I actually won something that was like, actually, it's really nice to have some kind of recognition. But I'm really aware that mine didn't come from inside the art world either.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Obviously they have an interest in art, but it's not from a critical viewpoint.
I see. Mm. Yeah.
So it feels safer, I guess, to me.
It does. Mm. And also, I'm not a competitive person.
Mm.
Entering into competition with others just feels so against my values.
Mm.
So entering fine art competitions just feels a bit icky.
Mm. I hear you.
There's a level of rejection, but also like a misalignment with my values.
Yeah.
So the whole thing doesn't feel great. But I don't know. I guess I'm just experimenting with playing the game and wondering if I can rewrite that in the way that artists within the last 10 years have rewritten the way that art comes into the world.
Well,
like,
that's
can
it,
we
isn't
reinvent
it?
That?
Yeah. And I think that's a bit of a watch this space, isn't it? Because I think there's going to be some pretty interesting shifts and changes that come out in the post-COVID world, but really living with pandemic situations kind of a thing, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But I got rejected there too, so I've already experimented with it.
Oh, what do you mean?
Well, I thought if I could have an exhibiting experience, what would I like it to be? And I thought the ideal would be I sit in a beautiful garden and I paint, and then those works are shown in that environment. So I contacted Diggers, which is an Australian, Victorian-based, I think, institution that, how would you describe it?
Well, they preserve a lot of the heirloom varieties of flowers and vegetables and keep all of those seed lines alive, and you can purchase their seeds and, you know, for all these magnificent plants that aren't available in regular nurseries, etc. And they have a couple of beautiful locations, one in Blackwood, which is quite close to us, and
there's
another one on
St. Earth.
Yeah, and then one on the Mornington Peninsula.
Which I went to in November.
Yeah.
And then one in Dandenong, which is
on
the mountain.
Yeah.
So I visited them all, and like with my English heritage, it has such a strong connection. Those gardens are so much a part
of cool climate,
the European
focused. Yes.
Yeah, world. So I approached them about having a residency. They don't have a program, but I was like, hey, what do you think? Could we do something? I'd love to like go to the Garden of St. Earth and paint for a few weekends in a row in the gardens, maybe run a workshop in return and exhibit in their space. But the timing wasn't right.
So last I spoke to you, they were considering it.
Well, yes.
And do you think it was just all, do you think it was just maybe it was a bit too hard basket for right now? Because, you know, we're only just really coming out of lockdown every other week. We don't know what the rules are.
That was it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it wasn't.
It may happen.
Yeah. It was a, we don't have the bandwidth for this right now.
Yeah.
But I think maybe like continuing to plant the seed, because there aren't many artist in residency opportunities in Victoria, I'm discovering. I think Europe has an awful lot more and America has a lot more. It's just a population thing. But often I just don't think it's on the, it's just not, you know, something that they do or know. But I don't know. I don't know. But I did think, well, I can just make my own up. I can just make this up again.
You totally can. And it could be pitched to other organisations too. And good on you for getting out there and you know, thinking of that fabulous idea and communicating with them. Like, you're very inspiring to me the way that you do that. And I try to learn from that because I think sometimes I don't do that enough because I am too scared of hearing the no.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's my neurodiversity that allows me to be in the zone to take big risks. It's not a constant mindset. It's just like if I act in the moment that the idea comes to me, I can do it. If I overthink it, I can't. So it's that, you know, impulse control problem I can use to my benefit, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I just kind of like the idea of, like, I don't want to exhibit in a gallery that nobody visits except my friends. You know, I want my work to be in a space where it's an experience of people and I'm connecting with people I don't yet know. To me, that's the purpose.
Yeah, and to be working in a space with the plants that you're painting as well. Yeah.
And interacting with the gardeners who are growing them and like the learning. I think my natural curiosity would really, you know, be very fulfilled by an experience like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, can I ask you, where do you get your information from about like what grants and things are available?
Well, that's a really good question. Well, a lot of deep dives into Google. The
Google. Give me the keywords.
Art grants Australia. I don't know.
Highly complex.
There are platforms that just curate opportunities.
There are, aren't they? I just wondered if you were a member of an organisation that sort of does put those together. Because I think I know Craft Victoria do it and I'm sure there's arts organisations that do it.
Yeah, a lot of them only will show their own. But a great one is actually our local council, Tara Poole. She puts a lot, I'm finding that.
Yeah, I see that newsletter as well and see opportunities there.
Very good job of that. Curating those, but also don't discount the government business grants.
Well, this is where this story, let's bring it back around full circle, because really the one that I've won has been a business related grant. And that's where I'd like to know if there's some kind of a list somewhere.
Yes, there is. The Victorian government has one. It's like Vic Biz.
Okay.
But they're business ones. And this is where we're really
Talk about that, because this is probably a bit different to the one, because mine's a prize. So that's maybe different to a grant.
The business ones are much easier to get.
Oh.
You don't have to jump through nearly as many hoops. They're not as competitive. And I guess it's just about your government, the government's priorities.
And where they're looking for, you know, where they've kind of gone, where we think there could be an opportunity for growth or expansion in this area.
And they're going
to put some funding out there for people to put together.
That's right.
A business-related grant.
So, for example, there was one recently to activate at the end of the year. There was one to activate businesses to have outdoor spaces.
Yes.
So you could apply for one to help you conduct business outside.
Yeah.
And the arts sat as one of those industries that was eligible. You know, there are some for like research and exploring overseas opportunities. Often they're matching grants where you have to.
You invest and then they match. And often there's deliverables on them, isn't there? Like you need to deliver some kind of a something at the end of it that demonstrates that you've used it. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's usually tax receipts. It's not like a huge essay like an arts grant might ask you to acquit.
Yes.
You know. Yeah, I think it we're in an interesting space where both of those parameters apply to us.
Yeah. Okay, so I had completely the wrong end of the stick, because then the one that I've got is even a whole nother category, which is private organisations that are funding some kind of a grant or art prize because they have an interest in art, which is a hot. I would love to know if there was a list of those.
That's more like philanthropic, yeah?
Well, it is, because they're auctioning them off and raising money. And, you know, and I get asked for a lot of those contributions, you know, for different charities and things, and I can't always participate in all of them. But I did accept an opportunity with a donation of art that I'm going to do to an organisation that's happening this year, which I'll let people know more about when it happens, because it's a beautiful project. But yeah, there's so, and again, those kinds of opportunities where your work is being exposed to an audience that usually they're more your demographic of buyers. Mm. So it's really, I mean, coming around to sort of the end of this conversation, it's like, because really it's kind of been that thing, do you go down that road of seeking the academic approval of your work and participating in that area, or do you go another avenue? I don't know. Do you even need to divide them? Should we be playing both pools and see what happens, you know? Like,
I think it's a bandwidth issue, really.
Well, it is, isn't it? And time. Yeah.
And something I haven't experimented with yet, but I might, is outsourcing. You can
people can write grant proposals for a living, can't they? Yeah.
So, you know, you can upwork that or whatever.
And gee, they'd know what to say.
They need something to start with. They need the base building blocks. But I think at this point that I might be at that place. The other issue is that when there are a lot of applications for a grant, you can't get feedback. So you don't actually know why you weren't successful. Mm. Was it just there's so many applicants, it's almost like a lottery? Was it that the project wasn't really aligned? Or was it that your supporting material, like your bio and your CV, didn't really come to something?
Because you just don't know. And the thing that makes me wonder about, you know, that whole being in that world thing is how often are people awarded because the people reading the grants are familiar with the people that the grant applications are coming from, and they're like, oh, I've seen you come across my desk, or I've seen you in an exhibition in this gallery. Because they're in that world and participating in that world, I can imagine that would have an influence on them receiving awards. Like
potentially.
Because it's people that are making these decisions that are in the industry. So, you know, I wonder how much of a part that has to do with it. How much are they seeing you? How much exposure do you have in their world?
Yeah. But then how do you get that?
How do you know?
Chicken before the egg, you know.
Yeah. But do you find the more that you've done the grant applications that they take less time because you have a better idea of what they want and you kind of have things on hand? Because I know when I apply for things, the very few that I do, it's usually not that hard because I have all of that information at hand. Like I have a CV and a bio, and I have, you know, I know what work to put through in a folio of examples. I mean, it becomes easier from my perspective to do that each time, and that's partly how I kind of protect myself emotionally. I just do it really quickly and forget about it.
I think, yes, having a toolkit is really handy, but it's like applying for a job. It's like if your cover letter isn't good, they're not going to look at that other stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like if you've clearly just copied and pasted and not being specific to that organization or role or whatever, then it makes it look like you're not really putting effort in or something. I don't know. I do want to say, though, I have been on a grant assessment committee before.
Have you?
It was a community grant application process. So it was, you know, sports clubs and senior citizens centers and that sort of stuff. And you can certainly tell who's put work in
and who hasn't.
But also, I'm just going to say there are a lot of barriers to being good at writing a grant.
Yeah, well, there are, aren't they? You do need to have a certain type of education to be able to speak in the way that they want to hear.
You need a certain level of computer literacy, all these things. Just because you don't write a good grant doesn't mean the project isn't worthy. And I think within the community sector, you can, I guess, maybe be a little more flexible. We still have to meet the certain assessment criteria and get the certain number of marks per, you know, question. But there are also people within the organization that whose job is not to assess, purely to help people put them together. But yeah, I mean, that's another thing as well, is community grants. I find them actually trickier, because you're having to explain to people why art matters.
Ah, yes. Yeah. Well, that's a whole other kettle of fish, isn't it? I can hear the sounds of our lovely children playing in the background. So you can, I probably should have mentioned that at the start of the episode. Cuties. We got our noisy kids here today. But hey, that's probably, like, I think, time to wrap things up for this conversation, Steph.
Lovely.
Oh, so good to unpack it all, though. It's an area I think lots of artists see opportunities there, and maybe they're a bit like me and they're a bit scared, or maybe they're like you and they go, I'll give it a go. But, you know, if you don't apply, there'll be that one time when you win, like I did, just that once. I think so. I think it will happen for you. I think it will.
Well, yeah. You get better each time, I think, don't you? It's like
absolutely.
Anything.
Absolutely. And, you know, and you've only fairly recently sort of engaged back into a fine art practice, so maybe it's just a time thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Thanks, everyone.
Chat soon.
Bye.
You can always see more of my art over at susannethercutt.com. And if you're interested in learning from me or checking out the podcast notes, you can find those over on susannethercuttstudio.com. I love hearing your comments and feedback, so feel free to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you like what you're hearing, then why not snap a screenshot and share it in your Instagram stories? Be sure to tag me at susan.nethercutt so I can say hi. And if you've got a great idea for a future podcast episode, or know someone who you think I should interview, then pop on over to susannethercuttstudio.com/podcast, hit the button in the header image to shoot me an email. Catch you next time.